This is an encore presentation of Unreserved. Enjoy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Nupachone with our very special guest star, Rosanna Deerchild. Yay!
Thank you very much. It's so nice to be here on my show with my very special guests, the stars of the Nuppet Show, including who we just heard, Kermit the Frog. That's right, I said Kermit the Frog, a sort of cousin to a certain famous green frog we all know and love. Kermit is just one of the many Muppets-inspired characters created by Derek Starlight. His vocal and puppeteering talents have taken him from the Tsuut'ina First Nation all the way to Fraggle Rock.
You know, it's very rare that you would find Indigenous puppeteers, you know, that do this and, you know, spend time with it. So when I was there, I found my people.
But wait, there's more. Remember singing and dancing along to the musical Grease? Well, an Indigenous hip-hop duo is bringing Bear Grease Lightning to the stage.
What if in 1492 the natives won? These kind of opportunities would have been there for us. We would have been dancing in the street like Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta.
And Tom and Carol Ann Johnson overdubbed the kids' flick Chicken Run as a way to play with their Mi'kmaq language.
Minudayak, ovoy.
But now the demand for Mi'kmaq overdubs is, well, soaring. Danse, Anin, Buju, hello and welcome. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today on Radio Indigenous, representing and reimagining mainstream pop culture through an Indigenous lens. Like many of us, Derek Starlight grew up watching The Muppet Show. But he took his love for puppets a step further by learning all the voices. He used that talent to counter bullying and eventually create his own characters. I recently met up with a few of those characters in a Zoom call, and you will not believe who showed up.
Hi there.
Oh, hello, cutie.
It's nice to see you. Mm-hmm. I'm not Kermit the Frog here.
Are you his cousin, at least?
Yeah, I'm his cousin Kermit the Frog.
Oh, Kermit. Right. The lesser known Kermit, but not as any less amazing.
My reservation is called Frog Lake.
Of course it is. Mm.
Oh, can you see me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Everybody's here.
Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. All right, we're ready to roll.
Excellent. It's the Nuppet Show. That's right. I said the Nuppets. A Muppet-inspired cast of characters created by Derek Starlight. Derek has more than 24 puppets, and if you're from the Tsuut'ina First Nation, as is Derek, don't be surprised if one of those puppets reminds you of a human person you know, like our first guest, Granny, a character based off Derek's own grandmother. Hello, Granny.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just getting ready for the grandchildren are coming over.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't want to keep you too long, but can you please introduce yourself to our audience?
My name is Granny from the Tsuut'ina Nation. We are Dene people. Most people don't know what Tsuut'ina means. It means big casino.
Where do you get your material from, Grammy?
My material?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, you know, just whatever comes out of my mouth. You know, old ladies, you know, we like to talk. And people, sometimes I don't even know that I'm being funny, especially when I'm sitting at the bingo hall, like, you know, say we're Blackfoots and Dene people up here in Alberta. And sometimes we'll get visitors from down south, you know, the Apaches will come up. And then they'll say, gee whiz, look at those Apaches. They look like they're so rich. They don't want to be called Apache anymore. They want to be called Apache.
And what kinds of reactions do you get from the audience when you tell your granny stories like that?
Well, all the ladies like to laugh because they can identify for what the things I'm saying. But the men, they just want to take me home.
Ah.
Because I look cuddly.
Absolutely. Well, I won't keep you any longer. I know you got to go off and get ready for your grandkids.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I got one more thing to say before.
Okay.
Do we get paid for this?
Oh, well, the check's in the mail.
I'm sure it is. Okay, thank you.
That's Granny, the matriarch of the Nuppets crew. We're going to speak with Derek Starlight, the man behind this Indigenous cast of characters, in a few minutes. But first, let's meet another star of the show. I am asking now, looking at Wind Dancer. Hello, Wind Dancer.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing okay. I'm just a little shy, though.
Oh, you're a little.
I'm only 16.
Oh, well, you're very pretty.
Hiya, I know.
And if you're a little shy, how do you feel about being interviewed on national radio?
Well, I'm okay, just as long as my boyfriend doesn't see me.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. His name is Justin Bieber.
Oh, Justin Fever.
No, Justin Bieber from Beaver Lake.
Oh, Beaver. I see. And why are you worried about that?
I don't know, because he gets really jealous, especially when on my camera or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So, Wind Dancer, tell me, what kinds of things do you get up to with your friends back home?
Well, we're from, southern Alberta. So, you know, there's really not much to do. You know, we like to go swim at the slough. We like to go to the casino. We just like to go to powwows and whatnot. That's all. That's the only thing to do.
Do you dance in the powwow, Wind Dancer?
Yeah.
What kind of dancing do you do?
I'm a jingle dress dancer.
Oh, that's so lovely.
I know.
What is your favorite thing about performing with the Nuppets?
Well, I really like, being on camera. Everybody likes to look at me. And they keep putting their, you know, their hand to their ear, you know, and say, call me. I'm like, hold on, I don't think I'm going to call you. You probably had no minutes for your phone anyways. Hold on.
Well, Wind Dancer, it was very nice to meet you. Thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you. See ya.
See ya. That was Wind Dancer, one of the Nuppets. She's 16. Now, next we're going to talk to the Warrior.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us. Can you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Yeah, my name is the Great Warrior Hunter, and I'm from deepest, darkest standoff.
Well, you got some really beautiful regalia on. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, I wear this stuff because I am proud of who I am. Mm. You know, I got a headdress on and got war paint. I got a breastplate here. Even my pants, it's a birch cloth. You better tie that tight. I don't want to see a Geronimo. There you go. But I wear this stuff because, you know, I am proud of who I am. Mm. And every Native out there, Indigenous person, everybody should be proud of who you are. Mm.
Are you Indigenous yourself?
Oh, yeah, big time. Full-blooded. Mm.
Where are you from?
From the Blood Tribe.
Oh, cool. That's a cool tribe.
Yeah.
What does a warrior like to do for fun?
Well, you know, we hunt, but we do it because, we got to keep our tradition alive, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very, very important to keep tradition alive. And once we finish hunting, you know, we make things like, you know, what's on my head, headdresses and, you know, It's who we are. We're creative people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we're just about to speak with your boss, Derek Starlight, the man who put the Nuppet Show together. What can you tell me about him?
Well, he's handsome.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's from the Sioux in the Nation, you know. He could do over 500 different voices.
And do you like working for him?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's really fun, you know, and he pays very well. Mm-hmm. Our weekends are set. Yeah, he gives us money for the three important things.
What's that?
Money Mart and Walmart and Food Mart.
Well, thanks so much for talking with me a little bit, the warrior.
Thank you. Thank you. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
Catch you later. That is the warrior, one of more than two dozen Nuppets who travel across Turtle Island with Derek Starlight. Derek is back on the road after his latest project, working on the reboot of Fraggle Rock. You might have heard of that little show. And we happened to catch him between shows. Hello, Derek.
Oh, hello.
Now, we just met a few of the many characters that you work with. But how would you describe the Nuppets?
Well, they're actually people who are on the reservation. You know, I'm from the Sutina Reservation and also from the Blood Tribe. So I'm... you know, half Sutina and half Blackfoot. And, you know, when I was a child, I would imitate all the Muppets. But when I got older, everybody said, you know, you should make a puppet out of this guy. You make a puppet out of, you know, your uncle. He's funny, you know, and my granny, who was very inspiration in my life. They said, you know, make a puppet after granny too. She'll really like that. So a lot of the puppets that I have are actually people who are on the reservation.
You perform hundreds of voices over, was it the puppet set? 500 different voices. How did you develop that, such a mad skill?
Well, when Jim Henson had passed away in 1990, you know, that was the day I dedicated my life to the art of puppetry. And so I started to try to imitate all the Muppets. I could do them, you know, quite well when I was a little bit younger. But after he passed away, I was very young. And I started practicing it. And when I got older, you know, I could sound just like the characters. And that's how I started getting, you know, stand-up comedy jobs and whatnot.
What was it about the Muppets that you fell in love with?
Well, I think everybody was a CBC kid growing up because, you know, a lot of people on the reservation only had like three channels. And one of them was that came in clear was CBC. And so I would watch, you know, Fred Penner and Friendly Giant and Mr. Dress-Up, but Sesame Street would come on and I would have all the puppets and I'll start imitating them. And I used to think that Sesame Street was downtown Calgary when I was like 3 years old. And I used to point downtown and tell my mom, can we go down there? You know, Big Bird's down there, Cookie Monster's down there. The Muppet Show was over there. And she had a hard time trying to tell me how far Sesame Street really was. It was in New York. And for Christmas, when I was like four, I got all the puppets that, you know, that were out at that time in the stores.
Yeah.
So I just thought, you know, all I wanted to do was try to find my way to get to Sesame Street. You know, I wanted to work there all my entire life.
Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. My guest today is Derek Starlight, who has worked with puppets since he was a kid. And while he hasn't yet been to Sesame Street, he did make it to The Rock last year when he landed work on the reboot of Fraggle Rock.
You know, my entire life, I looked for places where they would teach puppetry, like, you know, how they would on Sesame Street and, you know, on the Muppet Show. I couldn't find it. And, you know, it's very rare that you would find Indigenous puppeteers, you know, that do this and, you know, spend time with it. So when I was there, I found my people, all the people that actually love Sesame Street and the Muppets and that work with them. And all day, that's all we did on the set was talk about the Muppet Show and Sesame Street and how we got into it and, you know, the voices that we could do and learning each other's techniques and whatnot. Again, it was, you know, a dream come true.
Yeah, yeah. Jim Henson speaks about Muppet magic, this ability to make the Muppets almost come alive. Can you describe what that is and how you've seen it in action?
Jim Henson, he would say, you know, there's no right or wrong with doing puppetry. It's getting your story across, you know. If you can make your puppet look real in front of an audience or on television, once the puppet starts moving on stage or on camera, you totally disappear and the puppet comes to life and everybody focuses on that character. Children and adults alike, you know, once they're focused on that puppet, nobody's there in the entire world except for that puppet, then you got him. That's Muppet magic.
And when did you first see that in your own experience, perhaps in the Muppet Show?
Well, I was in Vancouver. I went to film school at a very young age and tried to do stand-up comedy. And didn't work. You know, nobody laughed at anything that I did. I was so embarrassed. I turned redder than Elmo. Mm. But when they said, you could do all the Muppet impressions, can't you? I said, yeah. Do you actually have the characters? I go, yeah. And they said, it'll be funny if you did stand-up comedy with Muppets and have them do native comedy, you know, because you don't see Muppets do that. So right away when I did it, and my granny puppet, as soon as she got on stage, she said,
hello, everybody. Look at this place. There's lots of white people and natives. It looks like a Walmart in here. Or a big box of Timbits.
You know, and right away when they start laughing, you know, everybody, you know, that's when you know you have them. And then I thought, you know, okay, this is great. You know, after Jim Henson passed away, I wanted to do this in television. And when I got older, I never expected to be a comedian, you know, stand-up comedy. But it's just what people wanted to see, you know, and that kept me in business for, you know, the past 23 years.
Yeah. So after 23 years, how did you end up in the Jim Henson Studios?
So there was 12 puppeteers out of Alberta that were chosen to be on Fraggle Rock. And they're doing a diversity workshop down in Hollywood, California at the Jim Henson Studios. And I was chosen to go down there. I was the only Native person to go down there and to train with the Jim Henson Company and all the Muppeteers that worked on Fraggle Rock, Sesame Street, you know, the Muppet Show, Dark Crystal, all of them, they're all there.
That's cool. How did it feel being in that room?
Well, it was very scary because when I do these things, like I'm usually the only Native person there. Like when I went to film school, I was the only Native person there. I went to the Second City in Toronto at their training center. I was the only Native person there. I promote professional wrestling in Calgary with the Hart family. Mm. I was the only Native there. Then I went to the Jim Henson Studio and down in Hollywood, California. I'm the only Native person there. And so, you know, it felt like, you know, every time I go to school, I get very shy because I'm the only Native person there. And so there was people from all different cultures that were there. And how do I fit in? I try to mingle with the people, but they're all in their little groups. And the only person that came up to me and said hello was Brian Henson, Jim Henson's son. And he said, hello, welcome to the Jim Henson Studio. How are you doing? I go, I'm doing good. Mr. Henson, I was very nervous and stuttering. I was good. Very nice to meet you, Mr. Henson. You know, I work on Fraggle Rock. And he's like, yes, I know.
So you're very nervous. And so what did it take for you to get comfortable in that space?
Well, once everybody grabbed their puppets, you know, when I was a child, I would, like my mother told me, if I finish my school, one day I'll work on television. And so I thought that's what school is all about. So when I went to school, I would entertain the kids at school. So I had to bring my puppets on the bus and go to the city. But I used to get bullied a lot, you know, for playing with, you know, these puppets, little boy playing with dolls. So I got teased a lot. But every time I pulled out a puppet, you know, I would hide behind it. Mm. So it was kind of like puppets have been my shield my entire life, you know, to get to know people. And especially when in situations like that, you know, I would go into my comedy or something like that. When I do my workshops, I always say Kermit, you know, save me from the bullies, because they're really ready to tease me or try to beat me up on the bus. And then my grandmother said,
all they want to see is those Muppets. You're the only one that has it. The next time they try to tease you or beat you up, you show them those Muppets and they'll leave you alone.
I said, okay. So they're ready to tease me on the bus. And I pull out Kermit the Frog and he said,
all right, please don't beat me up today. I got a headache here.
And then they all start laughing. And he said, hey, that guy sounds just like Kermit the Frog. Do some more.
Hiya, 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 Bozzy Bear. I was walking down the streets of Calgary. I saw two peanuts. One was assaulted. Ah, waka waka. Ah. And then from there, I became the most popular kid on the bus. So again, you know, puppets have always been my shield, you know, and when I get nervous, you know, and they help me out in situations like that all the time.
And on the other side of the nut bit, how do children interact and react with the Nuppets when you're on the road, on the show?
When you pull out the first puppet, you know, their eyes go really big. And that's the feeling that I like, because when I was a child, you know, when I watched Sesame Street or the Muppets on television, my eyes are really big, you know, every time it came on television, you know, I couldn't wait for it to come on. So when I watch the children, you know, I see myself as a child.
Yeah. That's an amazing connection.
Yeah. But the funny thing is that I barely do children's shows, you know, it's mostly adults and conferences and whatnot. Do comedy shows and whatnot, because the adults love it more than the children do.
Really?
Yeah, like the big time, you know. It's because we all grew up with it, you know, and Sesame Street is 53 years old, and, you know, they've been on CBC. Everybody was a CBC kid. Mm. There was that Sunday night tradition where the Wonderful World of Disney would come on television, then the old Muppet Show or Fraggle Rock would come on. Yeah. So we all grew up with it. And so even adults, it brings them back to that time where, hey, I watch Sesame Street. I love Cookie Monster and Bert and Ernie and Elmo.
Yeah. Why do you think it's important that we have Muppets, you know, as Indigenous Muppets? Like, why is it important that Indigenous people see themselves in this way?
Well, for one thing, it helps us keep our culture. You know, and teaches children at a very young age that, you know, keeping your culture with you is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Having a character on Sesame Street, you know, they've had all different races, and it was very important to them, especially the Black community, because, you know, look, their president was a Black person, you know, Obama. And so I, my granny on stage, she would tell the children, you know,
say your ABCs, 1, 2, 3s. And finish your school. And I do believe we will see the very first Indigenous Prime Minister. And it could be any one of you. Granny loves you. Bye-bye.
Hmm.
And where's my check?
I told her it was in the mail. And what is your hope for the future of the Nuppets?
Well, like, I've tried so many times to get my own show for 23 years, you know, and I've always been denied, but, you know, the thing is to keep going. You know, I went to film school and acting school. I went to the Jim Henson Studio. So I hope that one day I'll have the Nuppet Show and do the characters that I've created on television for everybody to see. I'm hoping that we get season 2 for Fraggle Rock, and Sesame Street will send me an invite to do their workshop later on this year.
Awesome. Well, we all hope that you and your Nuppets have all the success. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Derek Starlight is a puppeteer from the Satina Nation. He is the creator of the Nuppets. Well, that was good Nuppet times. If you want to see what Granny, Wind Dancer, and some of Derek's other Nuppets look like, head to our website at cbc.ca/unreserved. Those guys are just ever cute. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Coming up, overdubbing movies into Mi'kmaq turned a garage hobby into a community industry for this Nova Scotia couple.
And we got a big kick out of it. You know, just hearing these characters speak Indigenous language, you know, it was funny. And, you know, it was hard to keep a straight face. And, so even just that interest grew.
Carol Ann and Tom Johnson take their language enthusiasm to the silver screen. Speaking of using your language to reinterpret, Attawapiskat band Midnight Shine did a cover of Neil Young's Heart of Gold in 2019. It features Powwow and Meshkegawak Cree. Here's Midnight Shine and Heart of Gold.
I wanna live, I wanna give. I've been a miner for a heart of gold. It's these expressions.
That was a cover of Neil Young's Heart of Gold, done in Meshkegawa Cree style by Midnight Shine. The beautiful video was shot in the band's northern community. You can check that out on our website at cbc.ca/unreserved. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, Indigenous people who are braiding mainstream and Indigenous stories together. That's a clip of the DreamWorks movie Chicken Run, overdubbed in Mi'kmaq. It's the work of Tom and Carol Ann Johnson, who did it as a fun way to play with their language. But the demand for their services, overdubbing all kinds of media into the Mi'kmaq language, has only grown. And now this garage hobby is blossoming to include the entire community of Eskasoni. Tom and Carol Ann, welcome to Unreserved.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hey, Rosanna, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. So tell me, what kind of demand is there for movies or other media to be overdubbed in the Mi'kmaq language?
There's a huge demand. There's so much of a demand that we can't even keep up with it ourselves. Unfortunately, there's some projects that are very interesting, but we just don't have the time ourselves to do it. You know, they require translation, they require recording, they require scripts to be transferred from English to Mi'kmaq, and that takes a lot of time. I'm not too familiar with English and French, but I think they're from the same language family. Whereas we're from a different language family, and we have to look at the language and what's being said, what's expressed. How do we express that in an Indigenous language where, you know, you're familiar with Indigenous languages and how much feeling is associated with these words? So we have to come up with certain words to ensure that what is being conveyed on film is also conveyed in an Indigenous language and with an Indigenous feeling. So it takes a little bit more time than your regular English to French, French to English.
Right. So who's asking for these Mi'kmaq versions?
Like Parks Canada, the movies. We've received calls from Los Angeles, LA, about another movie that's coming up that we haven't even, we're still going over the script. And the interesting thing about this is they want to do it right.
Right.
We want you to be involved. We want you to be coaching about the history to ensure that your story is portrayed accurately and not from a non-Indigenous worldview, but your worldview. So that's interesting. Then we have other, like there's one that I think National Geographic is involved with.
Wow, wow.
And, you know, we do a lot of community work too, like interviewing elders on a one-on-one basis and bringing their stories to light. And there's just like the other ones that we just don't have the time for. But we are involved in setting up a little studio in the community that will be community-driven, community-owned, and we're hoping to get more people on board to be involved in this type of work so that whatever we can keep up with, the studio will pick up, you know, wherever there needs to be assistance.
Wow, that's amazing.
I don't know if you're familiar, but there was also a translation done in Mi'kmaq in the series The Vikings. Mm-hmm. So they were also looking for translations. So we did that as well.
Cool. Yeah. Mi'kmaq speaking Vikings.
Well, they weren't Vikings, actually, in the Viking series. It had people that were Beothuk, and the producer, the creator, actually the writer, wanted a genuine or authentic indigenous language that was closest to the Beothuk, and he decided upon a Mi'kmaq language. So long story short, we ended up being the ones to translate those particular episodes in the script, and ended up heading off to Ireland where it was filmed.
Wow, so exciting.
Yeah.
So take me back to the beginning. What made you want to overdub the movie Gordy?
Well, we did not do that, actually. It was actually my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law who had done it, basically because we had just lost our daughter, who was a twin to our son. They were 4 years old, and he spoke only Mi'kmaq, and they thought that they could brighten up his day by taking this VHS video and overdubbing it with their voices and have it speak Mi'kmaq. So, and my son absolutely loved it, and then it kind of went from there.
Wow, that's beautiful. So how did this overdubbing work go from this beautiful gift for your son to work you wanted to continue?
Well, my brother was always involved with computers, you know, so he was always technically inclined, I guess. And one day he came to us and said, you know, you guys interested in doing an overdub of this movie? And we sort of said, well, yeah, but we're kind of busy. So he brought it over one day and said, let's just go try. So we took it to my garage, and I have a little studio in the garage, and we tried a few lines, and we got a big kick out of it. You know, just hearing these characters speak indigenous language, you know, it was funny, and, you know, it was hard to keep a straight face. And, so even just that interest grew from there to do a few lines, and the next thing you know, we're in the garage for 6 weeks straight, doing all these characters, and Carol Ann coming in every night with tea and bringing in scripts, and this is what we should say, and you know, this is what they're saying, and we're all having a laugh. And it was a fun thing to do, and we never expected to generate the publicity that it would. We were sort of kind of doing it secretly because, you know, this is not our work. The audio Mi'kmaq is our work, but not the actual film. So what we did is we reached out to DreamWorks to ask for permission to, if we can overdub this, and we never received word. And, you know, I was kind of concerned at first because I thought we were breaking the law, and but we were, it wasn't about, we didn't want to release this commercially. You know, it was all about just enjoying this animated feature in the first language. Mm. You know, there were a couple people from other communities that aren't too fluent in the English language, but when they heard the cartoon, they just loved it, and they kept watching it. And, you know, I remember our chief calling us, and he said, Tom, I want you to talk to this so-and-so fella. You know, he doesn't believe that I know Rocky from the Chicken Run series. Can you do a little voice in the Chicken Run series and talk to him? And he said, hold on. So he calls over this guy. They're in Quebec. They're meeting somewhere. And the guy gets on the phone, and he says, hi. And I put on my Rocky voice. Hey, how are you doing? And, you know, I say it in Mi'kmaq. And, oh my God, he said, he just opened up his eyes and he dropped the phone and he's running around and he's telling everybody, Rocky's on the phone, Rocky's on the phone. And so that brought, you know, a good feeling to my heart, knowing that, you know, there's these people out there who don't really appreciate these type of movies because they're not as versed in the English language as the Mi'kmaq. But to watch a whole film in the first language that they're familiar with, I'm sure that must have created good feelings for them, and for them to be able to understand what is being conveyed in these clips, it just brought joy to our hearts.
Aw, that's so funny. What a great story. You mentioned that you're trying to get a recording studio for your community running. Tell me more about what your vision for that is.
The band office has graciously donated a portion of the old health center. They said, okay, if you want to do the studio, we have a space here. So we've designed a studio. We're going to have one main studio and a couple little studios that we can do interviews, whatnot. But there'll be a main studio where this is going to be a multi-purpose studio where we're going to have cameras in there, sets. We'll be doing interviews with elders one-on-one. We'll be doing podcasts. We'll be doing cooking shows, talk shows, whatever the community wants and whatever we're capable of doing, we'll be doing. Because from there, we can broadcast out into the community as well through our local community channel. We're in the final stages of the studio construction now. And once we're complete that, then we'll start training. You know, equipment has been another drawback because of COVID and the chip shortage throughout the world. You know, everything requires these little chips and it's affecting our whole supply. So it set us a little ways back. But once we have the studio in operation, content will start to be created. And maybe we can even do these type of interviews from the studio to CBC, wherever. You know, the possibilities are endless.
Sounds like you're trying to get my job, Tom.
No.
So tell me, what is the goal here? When will you stop going into the garage for hours at a time or building studios or, you know, overdubbing work? What is your goal?
I guess the goal would be when I take a walk to the store or walk in the store and when I start hearing little children talking in the first language, and if I feel comfortable that it's coming back, then I can sit back and relax and, you know, just enjoy the view.
And Carol Ann, what about for you?
I think that once we get this studio going and establish the network of people and players that are going to be involved to be trained in video editing, audio editing, all of that stuff. And so it can basically start running on its own and they could start talking to the elders. You know, we're up and coming elders ourselves. You know, we're not far from that. You know, another 20 years we'll be considered elders, I think, you know, and hoping that someday we could sit across someone that we can trust, who will understand us in our own language. That won't be so that we don't become misinterpreted.
Yeah. Well, I think with you two on the job, that is absolutely a reality that is going to happen.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you both for your time today and sharing this wonderful story with me.
Thank you, Rosanna.
Thank you.
Carol Ann and Tom Johnson are language enthusiasts from Mi'kma'ki. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today on Radio Indigenous, movies, Muppets, and musicals with an Indigenous twist. Yes, I said musicals. We'll get some purple French tail, that's a 30-inch tail. And it's the best one of all time. Palomino Dashboard and Doom of the Tins, oh yeah. It's a familiar tune, and you might think you know what comes next, but watch out for the lyric change. Instead of Go Grease Lightning, get ready to sing Bear Grease Lightning. This is Bear Grease, the musical. Think poodle skirts, but also ribbon skirts. And think doo-wop with some hip-hop. What started as a show at the Edmonton International Fringe Festival has just added a tour through the U.S. to its run. Crystal Lightning is the co-creator and writer of this musical beauty. Hello, Crystal. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Rosanna. Thank you for having me.
So, as they say, tell me more, tell me more. Why did you want to take this classic musical and give it a Treaty 6 Indigenous twist?
I mean, who doesn't love Grease? My husband and I are huge fans of the musical. We love everything from like the borderline, you know, humor and the dancing and John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. We love the love story. And we were like, man, why can't we do something like this? Let's rewrite and add some native humor in there and just kind of change the lyrics in the hits of Grease and make it native. And so that's what we did.
It's amazing. You know, when I was a kid, I remember like I had back in the day when they had record players and records, I would put on Grease, the musical. I remember the cover. I remember the words inside the jacket and I would sing along and make up dance moves and stuff. Is this something that you did as well when you were growing up?
You know, to be honest with you, I wasn't introduced to Grease until about a few years ago. So it is a little bit before my time. But once I watched it, I was obsessed. Like, I loved it. I watched it over and over and over again. And when I met my husband, Red Cloud, who's the other creator of the musical, we were like, oh my gosh, we originally wrote this about 2 years ago for the kids, because Cloud works in Enoch at the school, and we were going to write this musical for the kids, and then pandemic hit, so we had to shelf it because school got stopped. And then when we got approached by Fringe, we were like, oh my gosh, let's do Grease, let's do Bear Grease. And so we pulled it out and we started working on it again. We cast it, and we were not prepared for the response that it got. I mean, it literally sold out in 30 minutes. And so they added another show. And so that was the beginning of this beautiful ride.
And it has been a beautiful ride. Now you mentioned that it's an Indigenous reimagining, sort of a retelling. What are the elements of the production that make it Indigenous?
So we kept some of the original hits, like, you know, Summer Lovin', but now it's Summer Snaggin'. And a line is, I met a girl, she's Enoch Cree. I met a boy, he's not related to me. So just adding, like, you know, certain funny lines. We added some traditional drumming in there. Our wardrobe is, we'll do the poodle skirt, but we'll add some, you know, ribbons on there, native bling. We added some doo-wop in there, but again, like doo-wops, we call it a hip hopera, because, you know, it's hip hop with doo-wop, with traditional stuff, with comedy. I mean, it's just a well-rounded piece. So, you know, we wanted our elders to really feel this, because we have the traditional element and we have the songs from the 50s and 60s, you know, but then we add the dance in there and the singing. So there's something for everybody in there.
And speaking of the wardrobe, it's just gorgeous. I just love the poodle skirts with the ribbons on it and the pink lady jackets and the beaded medallions with the leather jackets. It's just, it's gorgeous, girl. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. Yes, that was really important. We wanted to keep the feel of 50s and 60s doo-wop, but, you know, we have such amazing Indigenous designers out there. Like Alyssa Sutherland made both of my poodle ribbon skirts. And oh my gosh, some of the most amazing jewelers out in Indian country made our medallions. And we're actually the pink aunties, not the pink ladies.
Like it. I like it.
So we're the pink aunties, and the boys, they're the tugboats. So, you know, switching it up just a little bit.
That's amazing. And getting back to the music, that you've rewritten quite a lot of the songs, and so cleverly, like Go Grease Lightning, your song is Bear Grease Lightning. Can you tell us about some of the lyrics that you rewrote in that song?
Yeah, so whatever community we're going to, we try to tailor it. So like, for example, here in Edmonton in Alberta, we're like, go Grease Lightning, you're going down the Henday fast. Grease Lightning, Bell, Grease Lightning. And then if we're in Calgary, go Grease Lightning, you're heading down Deerfoot Trail. You know, like, and then, you know, we'll say, because there's quite a few skits in there, you know, that transition our song to song and the mood of whatever scene we're in. You know, a big thing in the Southwest is fry bread. So, you know, one of the lines is, hey, fry bread butt, you know, how you doing? And then here in Treaty 6, we'll say, hey, bannock butt, you know, so we just like try to make whatever crowd feel like they're a part of the show. So, you know, whatever Native Indigenous community we're in, that's what we try to do.
And it's very Indigenous storytelling in that way. Was that intentional?
Oh, absolutely. Because the thing is, we get the reaction, the laughter. That's the biggest payoff as a writer and as the creator of the show, is when you hear the crowd reacting to what you're saying and laughing, and afterwards coming up to you and saying, I can't believe you said, oh, did you bring any canned salmon with you when we're up in BC? They're like, oh my God, that's what we have on our res, you know? And then in Albuquerque, their thing is green chili. Oh, did you bring any green chili with you? You know, they're like, we felt involved in the show. So yeah, that's a big part of it.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that the response was just immediate, sold out crowds. Was that sort of the reaction from your audience everywhere?
Yes. So for example, Vegas was a 95 person theater, and we sold that one out. People were driving from Colorado, from Alberta, you know, to come to Vegas to see us. And that is just the biggest reward, I think.
Yeah.
People really, they're wanting to see it. You know, people are hungry for this type of content. They're hungry. You know, a lot of our stories are very sad, and they need to be told, absolutely. But we felt like we needed something to make people feel laugh and feel proud. And like, what if we won? You know, what if before 1491, in 1492, the natives won? These kind of opportunities would have been there for us. We would have been dancing in the street like Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta. You know, we wouldn't have been in residential schools. We wouldn't have, you know, so we dedicate every show that we do to the residential school survivors, the 60 Scoop, you know, all of that, because that's what we actually, that's our reality. That's what we went through. So we want to kind of take people on a nice ride through this hour and 15 minutes of like, this is what could have happened, and we're going to recreate it for you.
Oh, I love that. Let's unpack that and stay there for a moment. I just want to stay in this glorious moment where this could have happened if we had won.
Yeah.
This hunger that you talk about, this hunger for Indigenous story, not just Indigenous story, but joyous Indigenous story. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that a little bit more? What do you mean by this hunger that we have?
I feel like right now, you know, and because of the sadness of what we're uncovering with the residential school findings and these babies that we're, you know, digging up, and there's been such a sad feeling of our reality lately, you know, and there's medicine through laughter. There's medicine through entertainment. There's knowledge through entertainment. And that's something that Red Cloud and I are very good at. So we decided, why don't we share this with our community and non-Indigenous community as well? Because a lot of times, again, like with what's out there, because our stories are very sad. Mm-hmm. Our history is very sad. But a lot of it is like, man, look at, you know, natives love to laugh and have a good time. And we're a funny group of people. So let's create something to make people walk out of the theater and go, oh God. I mean, we have elders coming up saying this makes them cry with joy because they see a bunch of, you know, natives on stage having a great time and making them laugh.
Why did you want to remake a classic like Grease rather than create a whole new production with different characters and a different storyline?
Because Grease is cool. It's doo-wop. There's a love story, leather jacket, the cool cars and the gangs. We loved every element of it. And so we thought, okay. I mean, we have a few other that are in the works, you know, that we want to recreate, you know, West Side Story. We're going to do Rez Side Story. There's a musical called Hairspray, and we're working on Bear Spray.
I love it.
Yeah, we love those stories. And we thought, man, musicals are so much fun. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never seen a Native musical before on Broadway or anywhere else. And so we thought, man, we can't wait for these opportunities to come knocking on us door, on our doors. We have to create them ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Leveling up, right? Leveling up.
Absolutely.
What would you share with other Indigenous creators that might be listening about taking on classics, you know, like this? Is there anything you want them to know at the start of their projects?
I would say just make it your own. You know, that's the creative part of it. And never be afraid if you have ideas. You know, if you have ideas, all you can do is put them out there. And guess what? If they don't hit, that's okay. But if they do, you got a winner. Mm. You got to just put it out there. You know, in the beginning of my writing career, I used to like second guess myself and redo and redo. And then, you know, it takes forever to finish a project because you overthink it. And I think if you just put it, write down your ideas on paper and just keep on working, putting it out there, eventually you'll have a piece, you know, but do not give up.
Thank you. That's great, great advice.
You're welcome.
From the Pink Auntie herself, Crystal Lightning. Crystal Lightning is co-creator and writer of Bear Grease the Musical, along with her husband, MC Red Cloud. That's all our time this week. This episode was produced by Kim Kasher, Aaron Knoll, Kata Dack, Laura Bone Stubing, and me, Rosanna Deerchild. You can find more on our website at cbc.ca/unreserved. Or download the podcast on the CBC Listen app or your favorite pod places. I'm your favorite cousin, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Kanaskinamitnawi, Egosay.